The greatest men and women of all time, the greatest thinkers, the greatest mystics, the greatest philosophers, the greatest writers, the greatest poets have all stood in awe, like standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, at the great concept that your life is what your thoughts make it. As Emerson said, you become what you think about most of the time. Earl Nightingale, in his Strangest Secret of Success, simply said that you become what you think about all day long. So what we have found is, going back to the law of correspondence, is that our outer world is merely a reflection or corresponds with our inner world. In computer language, they have an expression, GIGO, which means garbage in, garbage out. But it also means good in, good out. Now, if the human being was like an animal and that we were programmed permanently and could never change our instincts and our responses, then we would have no hope. But the good news is that everything that we have learned, we can unlearn. That everything that has been programmed into us can be deprogrammed and can be overridden with new programming. And what we're going to talk about in this session is really the most important thing I've ever discovered in the history of success. And everything comes up to it and goes away from it. Margaret Mead called this the greatest breakthrough in the discovery or in the examination of human potential in all of human history. Perhaps the greatest breakthrough of the 20th century. It summarizes what 100 years of philosophy and psychology have done into a very simple concept. And once you have this concept, your life is forever different. It's not easy, and no honest person will ever tell you that anything is easy. But it is eminently achievable if you want it badly enough and you're willing to work hard enough. Well, so here's what we say. We say managing yourself and others for peak performance. This is the essence of raising happy, healthy, self-confident children. It's the essence of building a peak performance work environment, of being a superb manager of a world-class sales force, of being a top salesperson, a top parent. It's really the essence of excellence as a human being. And we say, number one, your self-concept is the master program of your subconscious mind. It's the master program. Now, you know what MS-DOS is. MS-DOS is an operating system. It's like Windows is an operating system on top of MS-DOS. All programs run on that operating system. Your self-concept is your operating system. Everything that you produce on the outside is determined, modified, affected in some way by your self-concept. You cannot change what is being produced on the outside without changing your operating system. So that's the first thing we know. Second, we say you always perform on the outside based on how you think on the inside. You always perform on the outside based on how you think on the inside. Now, there are laws. The law of belief says that your beliefs become your realities. But the things that you believe may not necessarily be true. However, if you believe them intensely enough, they will become true for you. The law of attraction says that you attract into your life people and circumstances in harmony with your own thoughts. And your own thoughts may be positive or negative. They may be uplifting or depressing, but whatever, you'll attract people and circumstances just like them. The law of expectation says that your expectations tend to become your own self-fulfilling prophecies. In other words, what you expect to happen usually does. And if your expectations are based on false information, so you have false expectations, that's what will happen anyway. For instance, your expectations could be that you are destined to have an extraordinary life and be extremely successful. Is that no matter what happens, it's all part of a learning process that is leading you inevitably to great success, happiness, and accomplishment. And if you absolutely expect that to be true, if that's your fundamental belief, then over time that will become true. You'll be able to throw off the ups and downs of life. You'll be able to ignore the negative influences around you. If you confidently expect to be a great success, then by gum, you sure will be. No matter what people tell you, you just say, well, it'll be all right. Everything will work out fine. And we know that an attitude of confident expectation is a hallmark of highly successful people. They just expect to succeed more than they fail. They expect to be liked by others more often than they're disliked. They expect to learn from every difficulty that they have. They expect to keep making progress. They just confidently expect it. And surprise, surprise, your expectations affect your realities. What you experience on the outside is determined by how you think on the inside. As they say, you are not what you think you are, but what you think you are. In the Bible, it says, as a man thinketh in his heart, which means in his subconscious mind, way down deep, so is he. According to your faith, it's done unto you, and so on. Well, number three is you don't believe what you see what you believe. You see what you have already decided to believe. Irrespective of whether or not that information is based on false information. For example, if I were to say, what is your name, sir?
Pete.
Okay. And I was going to say, I'm going to introduce you to someone. Pete is one of the most brilliant entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. He's built a $500 million company starting from nothing in 3.5 years. He has a mind that is absolutely incredible. He owns 200 different organizations, and he's got global connections. He's consulted regularly by the Swiss bankers for international currency movements. And you're really going to enjoy talking to him. And then I bring you up, and I introduce you to Pete. Now, it doesn't matter what Pete says, you're going to consider it to be brilliant. If Pete says, sure is a nice day today, geez, what does that mean? Soybean futures. In other words, if your expectations, what psychologists call your mental set, or the framework within which you look at a person, is a certain way, then you will see, listen here, you will believe what you have already decided. You will see what you've already decided to believe. But if I were to tell you that Pete is a scoundrel, and he just got out of San Quentin 3 days ago, and he has snuck in here with somebody else's identification, and his whole purpose in being here is to steal wallets and purses, and I want you to see him because you want to watch him because he's going to be the most dangerous person in this room. And then I pointed him out to you, your attitude, if you believe me, again, the key is the source, your attitude would be totally different. Let me just point out, for instance, I have 4 young children. I have told my children from the time, long before they could speak, that they're the most wonderful kids in the world. They're fabulous kids. They're the best kids. I tell them, you're the best in the West. You're the best in the West. You're the best little kid. You are so smart. You're so intelligent. You're so creative. You're so funny. I hug them and I kiss them and I always tell them what wonderful children they are. And I tell them this over and over again. No matter what happens, they bring me home a report card and they have one good grade and a bunch of lousy grades. All I do is talk about that one good grade and how smart they are and how they could bring up the other ones as soon as they decide to. And it's the most remarkable thing. So all the time my children have been growing up, they've been told by the most believable authority figure in their life what wonderful people they are. Does it affect their personalities? You bet your bippy it does. When we were in Los Angeles, I took my 10-year-old son to Los Angeles and we met President Gerald Ford at a seminar that I was doing. And Ford was going by with his security people and I said, President Ford, I'd like you to introduce you to my son David. Here's David, he's 10 years old. He's been taught to shake hands and look the person in the eye and say, how do you do? And so Ford comes like this, and David goes, wham, boom, shakes hand. So how do you do, sir? He goes, Ford goes, geez, that kid's got a good handshake. My son walks away, you know, met the president, met the ex-president. Well, it's because of his self-confidence, because he's always told what a great boy is. So therefore, if your parents or anybody in your life has told you something negative about yourself, there's a sneaking tendency for us to accept it as being either true or partially true, even though it may have zero basis in reality at all. One of the great rules, by the way, one of the most important of all principles, is to challenge your self-limiting beliefs. You see, we are all plagued by self-limiting beliefs. Beliefs that we tell ourselves, things that we tell ourselves to hold ourselves back. We shoot ourselves in our own feet, and then we admire our own marksmanship. We hold ourselves back with self-limiting beliefs. We tell ourselves that we're limited in some way, when in reality, it's probably not true at all. The fact of the matter is that in terms of actual potential, you have so much potential that if you ran at 100 miles an hour, full blast, using your potential for the rest of your life, you would never come within miles of what you're truly capable of doing. In fact, Ernest Holmes, the great metaphysician, once said that all negativity is rooted essentially in the frustration of potential. People feel that they're capable of doing vastly more. Nelson Mandela, in his talk to the Nobel Prize Committee when he received his Nobel Prize, said, "Our great problem is not that we feel that we are powerless, but that deep down inside we feel that we are powerful beyond measure." Powerful beyond measure. That you are powerful beyond measure. It's an incredible thought. It's almost a scary thought, isn't it? But it's also true. Because the powers that you have are extraordinary. And as William James said, we live habitually well within our powers. We have enormous reserves of potential that we habitually fail to use. Which brings us to number four, all performance, all improvement in personal performance begins with an improvement in your self-concept. All improvement in personal performance, in what you do on the outside, begins with an improvement in your self-concept, in your beliefs about yourself. When you change your beliefs about yourself on the inside, you change the reality of your life on the outside. Number five is there is a relationship between self-concept and performance. There's a direct relationship. In fact, if we turn the page, your self-concept precedes and predicts your levels of performance and effectiveness in everything you do. The self-concept always comes first. It's always as within, so without. It always begins on the inside and radiates outward. So if you take this graph and can imagine that this is your potential for effectiveness. Effectiveness as a salesperson, effectiveness as a parent, effectiveness as a friend, effectiveness in terms of your health, energy, finances, and so on. You've heard it said that the average person uses no more than 10% of their potential. I heard that for years. The average person uses only 10% of their potential. The average person uses only 10% of their potential, and so on. And then someone pointed out to me that if that was a true statistic, that means that 90% of your potential is left untapped. Let's take it in its simplest terms. It means that compared to what you could earn, you are earning about 1/10. Or put it in reverse, you could probably earn 10 times what you're earning today. And of course, we know that is true, that you could earn 10 times what you're earning today. And why do we know that's true? Because there's lots of people doing it. Lots of people your age who are doing it. Lots of people started off with nothing who are doing it. Lots of people in your field who are doing it. So obviously it's doable. If there was only one person in America earning 10 times as much as you're earning, then you could say, well, that's a coincidence. But if there's hundreds and thousands and millions of them, well, then maybe we have to say there's something going on here. And whatever anyone else has done, you can do. Whatever anyone else has learned to get from where they were to where they are, you can learn as well. But, of course, the statistics, according to Stanford, are a little bit worse than 10%. The average person, according to Stanford, uses only about 2% of their potential. The average person has got a lot of potential, but they're saving it up for a good purpose, yet to be determined. We also know there's a direct relationship between the amount of your potential you use and your self-concept. And since the average person, let's use 10% as a generous estimate, since the average person's self-concept is far more limited than it needs to be, then your level of effectiveness is limited as well. We also know something else. We know that your self-concept is subjective. In other words, what you think and feel and believe about yourself is not based on reality. It's not based on fact. It's based on information that you have taken in and accepted as real, and as a result, it has become true for you. Most of our self-limiting beliefs have no basis whatever in reality. If you ask an adult, can you play a violin? He'll say, no, I don't play a violin. If you ask a child, the child will say, I don't know, I haven't tried yet. The adult is very, very quick to shoot themselves in the foot. The adult is wide open. The child, like the teacher, goes up to little Bobby and says, Bobby, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm drawing a picture of God. She said, you can't do that. Nobody knows what God looks like. Yeah, well, they will when I'm done. In other words, young people don't have all the blocks. We say we're old and mature now. Because you know what old and older and more mature and wise means? It means we've sold ourselves out. We've settled for less. We've put our dreams in the closet, as they say. We've accepted that we're limited, and whenever possible, we'll encourage as many other people to think the same way, too. So we know that your self-concept controls your performance, and your subconcept is subjective. Think about that. You think that you're not good in some particular area of life? You think that your income is limited? It's subjective. Now, let me explain to you what I mean. We each have a series of mini self-concepts. You have a self-concept for how you dress, and you have a self-concept for how you play a musical instrument, and a self-concept for how well you tell jokes and speak in public, and a self-concept for how punctual you are, and how well you use your time, and how much you read, and whether or not you listen to audio programs in your car. You have a self-concept for how smart you are, how creative, how quickly you learn, what kind of a memory you have. You have a self-concept for how likable and personable you are with others. If you're a salesperson, you have a self-concept or a mini self-concept for each of the different parts of selling. For instance, for telephone skills, prospecting, approaching, questioning, presenting, answering objections, closing, and so on. You have a whole series of tiny little self-concepts that put all together, combine to give your overall self-concept as how you are as a salesperson. You have a self-concept for what kind of a parent you are, what kind of a child you are to your parents, what kind of a husband or wife, what kind of a lover you are, what kind of a drinker you are, how much you drink, how much you weigh. You have a self-concept for your manners. You have a self-concept for every part of your life that you consider important. By the way, men have a self-concept for driving. All men are excellent drivers in their self-concept. This, by the way, ladies, is a genetic thing. We have an extra chromosome that has not yet been discovered for excellent driving. You can tell, by the way, when your self-concept is challenged, your inner beliefs about yourself, is because you instantly react negatively. You're just like your mother. You're never on time. If it's a clash with what you believe yourself to be, you react defensively and angrily. It's just natural. You have what are called triggers that a person can just push and get you going. So gentlemen always have the ability to drive well. And any lady who has ever corrected a man's driving knows that we do not respond too well to it. All men believe that deaf, dumb, blind, drunk, or stupid prop us up behind the wheel of a car, and we are great drivers. Women, by the way, have a self-concept for manners. Women are absolutely wonderful about manners. It is women that actually hold society together because they are so cognizant of the correct ways to do things. And even if a woman is wearing rags and covered with dirt and throwing dishes and screaming, if you ever accuse her of having had poor manners, she will never forget. In fact, she will put it into that steel trap memory box that's available at instant access 20 years later. Do you remember the time? Now, here's the point that turned my life around many years ago with regard to self-concept. I couldn't believe this. I stood there staggered. I still remember the time and the place I learned it many years ago, is that each of us has a self-concept with regard to the amount of money that we make, and that you can never earn more than 10% above or below your self-concept level of income without engaging in compensatory behaviors. Your self-concept is like a thermostat, and it has what is called a comfort zone. And your self-concept level of income is your comfort zone. And you strive to get into the comfort zone, and that we know two things about the human psyche. We strive to get into a comfort zone and then stay there, and we will resist any change that moves us out of our comfort zone, even positive change. Second of all, if we're moved out of our comfort zone involuntarily for any period of time, we'll struggle to get back into it and rebuild it immediately. Has anybody ever gone on a 2 or 3 week vacation somewhere? You know, you go away, you rent a condominium. Very first thing you do is you go down to the store and buy all the same foods you left back at home. Sometimes you take your own coffee cup, and from our kids, we take their toys, their blanket, and their pillow. In other words, we move and we recreate a new comfort zone. So we know that the amount of money that you earn today has nothing to do with what you're capable of earning. It has only to do with where your comfort zone is today. If you earn 10% more or above your self-concept level of income, you'll immediately engage in what are called compensatory behaviors, throwaway behaviors. You'll do everything possible to get rid of the money. Have you ever had this experience? You get a bonus, you come home, I got a bonus. Let's blow it. Let's spend it. What can we buy? And it's like it's on fire. Let's get rid of it. And we go back down into the comfort zone, and we're comfortable again. The money is gone. We spend it on holidays. It's the most amazing thing. We lend it to people. We buy stocks that promptly go south. We buy things that are gone. We even lose the money. We even get rid of it in the most incredible ways. Now, that's why, by the way, you often hear about drug dealers. They'll leave a briefcase full of money in a taxi cab. They'll actually lose it on the street. The most amazing thing. It's because deep down inside, this money is so far beyond their self-concept that they just lose the money. They just forget it. Well, if you go 10% or more below your self-concept level of income, you engage in scrambling behaviors. You work longer hours. You work harder. You take additional training. You get interested in other jobs and second income opportunities. But once you get into your comfort zone, you stay there. As it happens, your comfort zone is about 40% below the amount that you actually need right now to be comfortable. This is a basic study. People have said, how much you earn today, how much would it take for you to be comfortable? They say basically about 40% more on average. Then I'd be comfortable. But then that would become your new comfort zone. If they ask you the question a year from now, what would it be? 40% more. No matter how much you earn, you just simply adjust your comfort zone. When I learned this, I realized that if I could raise my thermostat, my financial thermostat, I could increase my income. And that was the turning point. It enabled me to increase my income 10 times in the next 5 years, and 10 times in the next 5 years. And I've shared these ideas that we're talking about here today with lots of people, and they've done the same thing. Absolutely phenomenal. The critical thing was that no matter how hard you work on the outside, nothing will change if you don't change your comfort zone, your self-concept on the inside, which is what we will talk about doing, and we are talking about doing throughout this course. So, we know that your self-concept is made up of three parts. The first part, A, is your self-ideal. Your self-ideal is composed of your goals, your values, your aspirations, the qualities that you admire in yourself and others, your hopes, your dreams, and your visions. Now, here's an important point. This is your ideal. This is the person you would ideally like to be at some point in the future. Your ideal exerts an enormous influence on the direction that you go in life, on what you do in the present to assure that you arrive there in the future. What we know is this, and I could spend an entire day on this, but we know that the critical word in here is clarity. Is successful people are very clear about who they are and where they're going and what they want to go and what to do and what they want to accomplish. They're very clear. And as a result, this acts almost like a magnet, and it pulls them forward in the direction of making their ideal into their real. So the greater clarity you have about who you are and what you would ideally like to be and have and do sometime in the future, the more likely it is that you will move rapidly toward your goals, and your goals will move more rapidly toward you. What do we know about unsuccessful people? Is that they're very fuzzy about their ideals. In most cases, they have no ideals at all. They compromise whatever qualities they may espouse. They have no visions or goals. And if something else comes along, they go that direction or that direction. Successful people are crystal clear, and they move in a straight line toward being the very best person they can imagine being and toward achieving the very best things that they can imagine achieving. So your self-ideal is very important. And we'll talk more about this, by the way, as we go along. The second is your self-image. Your self-image is the way you see yourself and the way you think about yourself. It's often called your inner mirror. It determines how you perform on the outside. It's like you look into this mirror before you perform. If you see yourself as an outstanding sales professional, calm, confident, relaxed, positive, highly paid, then when you work and interact with clients, that's how you'll be. If you see yourself new and inexperienced and not knowing enough about your product, then that will come across. But it is what is going on in the inside. And we know with self-image modification, if you change your mental pictures, if you change your mental pictures about yourself, if you begin to visualize and imagine yourself as you would like to be, that mental picture is accepted by your subconscious mind as a blueprint or a command, and you act on the outside consistent with the mental picture. Here's a key point. If you have something important coming up, every time you think of it, visualize and imagine yourself calm, confident, relaxed, and the whole situation coming out perfectly. Before you go to bed at night, before an important day, the last thing you think about is you visualize and feed your mind with a picture of yourself performing at your very best. Then your subconscious mind takes that picture into the laboratory and works on it all night long. The next morning, next day, when you get out and you go into that situation, you'll find that you function beautifully. All top athletes, all Olympic athletes, use these techniques all the time to train themselves, continually visualizing themselves at high levels of performance. Very important. Number, or C, is your self-esteem. Now, your self-esteem is really the core of everything. Your self-esteem is how you feel about yourself. Your self-esteem is the reactor core of your personality. It's what determines your level of energy. It determines what kind of a person you are. People with high self-esteem are likable and personable. They get along well with other people. They feel good about themselves. They're seldom sick. They have high levels of energy. People with high self-esteem are the most desired and desirable people in our society. The two characteristics of high performance in selling are high self-esteem and high self-responsibility. And each one feeds the other. A person who has high self-esteem accepts responsibility for their life. And a person who accepts a high level of responsibility has high self-esteem. And the very best definition of self-esteem is how much you like yourself. How much you like yourself. How much you like yourself as a parent. How much you like yourself as a sales professional. How much you like yourself as a spouse. How much you like yourself as a man or a woman. How much you like yourself in terms of physical fitness and health. How much you like yourself in terms of your income or your ability to speak or tell jokes or get along well with others, how much you like yourself. And we know that your overall self-concept is an average of your self-concept in all the areas of your life that you consider important. We also know that since you become what you think about, if you say the words, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, if you say, I like myself, your overall self-concept goes up. When your overall self-concept goes up, your levels of performance and effectiveness in each area of your life go up as well. The more you say, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, the better you do. The better you do, the more you like yourself. The more you like yourself, the better you do. The flip side of self-esteem is self-mastery, self-efficacy. The more you do, the better you like yourself. The better you like yourself, the more you do. And by saying, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, you actually build your self-concept up and you do better at everything you attempt. Try it. Say, I like myself. I like myself. I like myself. Now, when I first learned this, I said, it can't be that simple. And yet I started saying this 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 times a day. I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself. Like an engine, I think I can, I think I can, I know I can, I know I can, I like myself, I like myself. Now, here's an interesting point. When you first say I like myself, you may not like yourself. When you first say I like myself, sometimes you'll feel a little bit funny inside. This was my experience. And then I studied it in psychology, and I find that if you have old garbage stored in your subconscious mind, which says that you don't like yourself, or which is critical or skeptical of yourself, when the new message comes in, it creates what psychologists call cognitive dissonance, or two symbols clashing, the new old symbol and the new symbol, clang, and the clang is a feeling of discomfort. Whenever you say something to yourself that is inconsistent with old garbage, you feel uncomfortable and a little bit like an imposter, like a fraud, like it's not right. However, the words, I like myself, are perfectly good and perfectly true. And the more you like yourself, the better you do. And if you keep saying, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, you drive it deeper and deeper into your subconscious mind, and you like yourself more and more and more. And eventually, it overrides all the old negative messages. So you think you don't like yourself very much in selling. I've already spoken to lots of people here who've changed their whole self-esteem and self-concept with regard to selling. And their sales have gone up 3, 4, 5, 6, 700%. Because now they like themselves. They love themselves in selling. And when you love yourself in selling, people will start saying, boy, you sure enjoy what you're doing, don't you? You sure like what you're doing. You say, yes, I do. Because when I do it, I like myself more. And the more I like myself, the better I do it. The better I do it, the more success I have, and the more I like myself. And you get into an upward spiral. We say if you want to be the best in your field, you want to be in the top 10%. Is that true? Say yes.
Yes.
Then say, I'm the best.
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 Say, I love my work.
I love my
work.
I love my
work. Now remember, the energy that you put behind it is the key. If you have a thought, you know, Uzbekistan is part of the old Soviet Union. It's a thought. It has no emotion. It's irrelevant. My mother was just killed in a tourist bus in Uzbekistan. It's a totally different thought. The point is this, is that the thought plus the emotion equals the charge or the power and the result. So you're saying, I like myself, I'm the best, I love my work. Nothing happens. But if you say, I like myself, I like my work, I love my work, I'm the best at what, What happens is it's accepted by your subconscious mind. Now, your subconscious mind will resist because it's been programmed with all that crud from previous years. You say, I like myself, subconscious mind, I'm the best, I love my work. No, you don't. No, you're not. And absolutely not. Yes, I do. No, you're not. Yes, I do. No, you don't. And this fight goes back and forth. And finally, your subconscious mind says, okay, okay, if that's the way you want to be, all right, like yourself, love your work, be the best. I don't care. Remember, your subconscious mind does not think. It merely responds to your commands. Your subconscious mind is extraordinarily powerful, and its job is to keep you consistent on the outside with your commands on the inside. So if you say over and over again, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, it'll change your body language. Your subconscious mind will correct your body language and your tone of voice and your handshake. It will change your actions and reactions. You'll like yourself more. And when you like yourself more, ta-da, you like other people more. And when you like other people more, they like you more. And so your life gets better and better. Now, some people say, well, isn't liking yourself the same as being conceited? No. People who are conceited have either superiority complexes or inferiority complexes. They're outside the normal range. Conceit is an overcompensation for deep down feelings of something being wrong. And even a superiority complex is an expression of feelings of inferiority. But a person who is really at one with themselves likes themselves and likes other people. You say, you're a big dork. Well, so what? Your opinion. Who cares? You know, you have a failure experience in selling. So what? You have an experience, but you are not the experience. You failed in selling, but you're not a failure. In other words, if you have high self-esteem, you're tremendously resilient to the inevitable ups and downs in life. And the key is just to say, I like myself. I like myself. And everything that we do has to be aimed at increasing the amount at which we like ourselves. Why is it that we strive to be excellent in our fields? Because you can never be happy and you can never have high self-esteem if you feel inferior in your field. The absence of a commitment to excellence is an acceptance of mediocrity. When you become one of the top 10% in your field, you really like yourself. You feel good about yourself. People respect and esteem you and look up to you, and they ask for your advice, and your bosses respect and esteem you and want to take you out for lunch, and your customers like you and want to buy from you and recommend you to others. And you live in a beautiful home and you drive a nice car and you feel wonderful about yourself as a person. So the reason we strive for excellence is because excellence reinforces and supports our self-esteem. You can't have self-esteem all by itself floating in the air. You can't have high self-esteem detached from reality. You can't be a jerk and a failure and have high self-esteem. So what you do is you constantly, when you have goals, you have higher self-esteem. Because only people who have high self-esteem set high goals for themselves. So the very act of setting high goals creates what is called the reversibility effect. Is if people with high self-esteem set goals, and you want to have high self-esteem, you set goals, and it causes you to have high self-esteem. Are you with me so far? If people have high self-esteem, get along really well with others, then concentrate on getting along really well with others, and surprise, surprise, they will treat you well, and your self-esteem will go up. Everything is back and forth, back and forth. Windshield wiper. And your whole life must become a constant process of upgrading your self-esteem in every area of life that's important to you, and you will accomplish extraordinary things. And it starts by saying, I like myself. So number 7, the most powerful words in self-concept reinforcement are the words, I like myself. I like myself. If you tell your children, I love you, you're the most wonderful children in the world. If you tell your spouse that he or she is the most wonderful person in the world, they like themselves more. They like themselves more, they like you more. If they like you more, you like them more. You can actually increase, dramatically enhance the quality of your relationships with the people around you by saying things to them that cause them to like and respect themselves even more. Because everything that you do that causes another person to feel better about themselves causes you to feel better about yourself. We are constructed by nature in the most remarkable way, is you cannot uplift another person without it simultaneously uplifting yourself. The flip side is also true. We cannot do something negative or say something negative about another person without tearing down ourselves as well. Shakespeare once wrote that the fragrance of the rose lingers on the hand that casts it. The fragrance of anything that you cast lingers on your hand. Number 8, there are 2 major obstacles to high performance. The first A is the fear of failure. The fear of failure is learned in early childhood when children are told over and over again, no, stop, don't, get away from there, stop touching that. Children hear, the first word they hear over and over again is no, stop, no. Children are driven by instinct to touch and taste and smell and feel and get into everything. They're little kamikaze pilots. They have no sense of danger, nothing. And parents are always trying to protect them by saying, no, stop that, get away from there, leave that alone, put that down, now look what you've done. Children eventually, if they are verbally, emotionally, and physically disabused, begin to develop the feeling, I can't. I'm too small. Every time I try something, mommy gets mad at me. They get angry with me. They shout at me, I can't. I can't. I can't. And as adults, whenever we're presented with a new opportunity, a new possibility, a book, a tape, a course, a job, a promotion, the first thing, I can't. I can't. Come up here and speak to the group. Oh, God, I can't. I can't. I can't. Just stand up and tell us how you got to where you are in your life. Oh, 54% of adults would rather die than speak in public. I can't. So whenever you're confronted with an opportunity to do something different, your natural response, which is taking you out of your comfort zone, I can't. We always feel this fear of failure in our solar plexus. It starts in the front of our body, and our solar plexus moves up through our stomach to our heart, our lungs, our throat, can even give us headaches. Can cause us to, our bladder to go loose and cause us to have to run and go to the bathroom. This fear of failure is terrible. And the way that you countermand the fear of failure, whenever you think of something that is fearful, you say the words which override these words. The words are, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. Whatever it is, I can do it. Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you. You can do it. I can do it. Tell your kids you can do it. Tell your spouse you can do it. Tell your friends you can do it. Tell people who are looking at a new challenge you can do it. Start a business, you can do it. Call on a big customer, you can do it. Just tell people you can do it, because every single time you reinforce somebody else, you reinforce your own courage. What is the word encourage? It is to instill courage into. When you encourage other people, you actually encourage yourself. And remember, fear is the big enemy. Our job is to get rid of this fear of failure that holds us back and paralyzes us. Imagine if you weren't afraid of anything in the whole world, what a difference it would make. Imagine if you were guaranteed a success in anything. Somebody waved a magic wand and said, whatever you do from now on, you'll be successful. And you went out here and you could do anything, call on anybody, go anywhere, start anything, try anything, and you'd be successful. Oh, the changes that you'd make would be phenomenal. We don't realize how much of a role fear plays in our life until we think what we would do if we didn't have any. And B is the fear of rejection. Fear of rejection is the second big fear, and it's learned when children are told, you'd better or else. If you don't, you're going to be in big trouble. Now you're in trouble, and parents withdraw their love and affection from the child and express disapproval and anger for what the child does. And the child wants to get along and wants to be loved and needs love more than anything else. So children learn at a very early age, if you want to get along, you better go along. So they eventually stop doing what their parents disapprove of, and they start saying, I have to. I have to. I have to do what mommy wants. I have to do what daddy wants. I have to do what they approve of, or they won't love me. And then we become adults, and this goes unconscious. And it's programmed into our subconscious mind. And many adults become hypersensitive. They're hypersensitive to the opinions of others. They're hypersensitive to the criticism of others. I have to do this. I have to do that. If I don't do this, he won't like me. She won't like me. They won't like me. They'll disapprove of me. What's the number one reason for failure in selling? The fear of rejection. Because we're afraid of the disapproval of people we've never even met before and we'll never see again if we don't call on them. Never see in the first place. So therefore, we become hypersensitive. We have this fear of rejection, which is a fear of criticism. It's a fear of ridicule. It's a fear of disapproval. And we find that all successful people have to overcome these fears of failure and these fears of criticism, these fears of disapproval, in order to move ahead in their lives. So what is the counter to the words I have to? It is, I don't have to. I don't have to. I can do anything I want to do, and I don't have to do anything I don't have to do. One of the most important things we do in life is we begin to define ourselves in our own terms. What this means very simply is this, is you do what you do because you want to do it and because it's consistent with what you think is the best in your own life. And you don't do it or not do it because you're afraid of what others might think. Because what others might think is really quite irrelevant because it changes all the time anyway, and you cannot organize your life on it. I read Cyrano de Bergerac, the play by Edmond Rostand some years ago. And I've seen the play in movies and I've seen it on stage, and they leave out a critical part of the book. And has anybody ever seen Cyrano, Cyrano de Bergerac? Cyrano is an extraordinarily individualistic, self-confident, outspoken man. Just a great, interesting man. Later on in the book, they ask him, they say, Cyrano, or in the play, Cyrano, why is it that you have always been so individualistic? You always have gone your own way. You've always been indifferent to the opinions of others. He said, well, he said, as a young man, I thought about this a lot, and I realized that the opinions of others were inconstant and constantly changing. So I resolved to follow the law of least resistance in this, that I would please at least myself in all things. And it's one of the great lines of poetry. Please at least yourself in all things. Don't worry about the criticism or disapproval of others. Who needs it? Wave at them with one finger and get on with your life. Please at least yourself in all things. And you know something? This is the height of rationality. Because everybody else's opinion comes and goes and changes and is inconstant as the wind and the weather. Please at least yourself. If you have a doubt, you say, what do I want to do? What do I, me, really want to do? And don't sacrifice your life because of what you think that others may think. Because the fact of the matter is, if you knew how little others really thought about you, you'd be insulted. The rule is most people don't think about you at all. Sometimes they think about you to try to make you feel guilty, but the rest of the time, the average person, including your mother and your best friend, is more concerned with a cracked fingernail than if your whole life goes down in flames. You know, don't ever sacrifice your life because of your concern with what you think others may think. Many people stay in bad relationships and bad jobs because why? Because they're afraid that others will be really upset if they leave. And when it finally reaches the point where they can't stand it anymore and they leave, and they turn and say, well, I've left that job or that relationship. And that person says, yeah, I wonder why you stayed there for so long. It's been obvious to everybody for years it wasn't working out. And you thought you would put on a great show, that you would really impress people, that nobody knew about this. Everybody knows. Here's the second rule. Remember I said people don't change? Rule number two, everybody knows everything. If you believe that other people don't know everything, then you probably need some counseling. Everybody knows everything. And if they don't know, somebody will tell them very soon. So those are the things. I like myself. And here's the most wonderful thing is that the more you like yourself, there's a direct relationship, a reverse relationship between self-esteem on the one escalator and your fears of failure and rejection on the other. Is the more you like yourself, the less you fear failure. The more you like yourself, the less you fear rejection. The more you like yourself, the less fears you have. So when you say, I like myself, and I can do it, and I don't have to do anything I don't want to do, when you talk to yourself in a positive way, you think, feel, and act in a positive and constructive way. We'll come back to this later, but 95% of your emotions at any moment are determined by how you talk to yourself. If you talk to yourself in a positive, constructive, dynamic way, I like myself, I'm the best, I love my work, I can do anything I put my mind to do. If you talk to yourself like that, then your self-esteem gets higher and higher and your fears get lower and lower. It's not your fears will go away, but when you do have little fears, you confront them, you counterattack them, you charge at them, with first of all taking charge of your mind and then doing what it is you fear until the fear is gone, right?
Right.
All right. And this is the key to high success. Number 9, there are two major traps based on fear. The first major trap, A, is called learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is a major mental illness that preoccupies 80% or more of Americans. We feel helpless. We can't change. We can't lose the weight. We can't increase our income. We can't get on top of our bills. We can't achieve financial independence. We can't sell more, earn more, do more, have more. We can't. I can't. I can't. I can't. And we just become so preoccupied with it, then we fall in love with our excuses. We fall in love with our excuses. Richard Bach once wrote in one of his books, argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours. And most of us take the brief against ourselves and argue against ourselves in court. We prosecute ourselves and tell ourselves all the reasons why we can't do it, why we're helpless. But the fact is that you are not helpless. You are powerful beyond measure. Isn't that true? Say yes. And if you believe it to be true, it becomes true for you. B is the comfort zone. The comfort zone is the most dangerous of all. The comfort zone is what we slip into, and some people slip into a comfort zone when they're very young. In fact, there's been some interesting work done in the last few years on age. You know, sometimes people say, close your eyes, and here's a question. How old would you think you were if you didn't know how old you were? And you know something? Your mind is largely ageless. Your body ages, but not your mind. If you were divorced from your body, you wouldn't know how old you were. That's why people who have amnesia have no idea how old they were or anything. And sometimes a person who's 39 will think they're 29, so they act 29. So your comfort zone is very important. So they say, how old are you? Do you know how old you are? You are as old as your dreams. You're as old as your hopes and your flexibility. You're as old as your goals. And there are people who are 65 years old, and they're dynamic, and they're exciting, and they're trying new things, and they're learning to operate computers, and they're taking up skiing and skydiving and scuba diving. And there are people who are 25 who are old because they've gotten into a comfort zone, and that what they do is they protect and defend and backpedal and shovel and so on. So what is your comfort zone? And whatever it is, get yourself out of the comfort zone with bigger goals. And we'll talk about this. Bigger goals, bigger dreams, bigger visions. And whenever you see somebody else who's doing something well, you just say, why not me? I could do that. I could do that. I could do that. Look at Tony Randall. Did you see that in the paper the other day? He's 72 years old, just had a child. How old is he? He's almost 80, just had a child. And hopes to dance at her wedding and meet his grandchildren. Remember George Burns? George Burns, of course, died recently. But on his 80th birthday, they said, what do you want people to be saying about you 50 years from now? He said, well, 50 years from now, he said, I want them to be saying that George Burns just happily celebrated his 130th birthday. So finally, number 10, your goal is to become unstoppable. And since you become what you think about most of the time, how do you become unstoppable? What you do is you say, I am unstoppable. And whenever you feel like stopping, you catch yourself and you repeat, I am unstoppable. Say it. Say, I am unstoppable.
I am unstoppable.
I am unstoppable. And whenever you run into any difficulty of any kind at all, you just simply stop and say, wait a minute. I'm unstoppable. I cannot be stopped. If you want to stop me, you'd better bring a .357 Magnum and get the first shot in the first time, or I'll be all over you like fleas on a hound dog. I am unstoppable. I studied this for 30 years, and I've concluded that everything that we learn about the development of character and personality comes to a peak at being unstoppable, being the kind of person that launches and refuses to stop until you darn well achieve what you want to achieve, right? Be unstoppable. And the more you like yourself, the more you persist. The more you like yourself, the less likely you are to stop. And you know what we have found is that people who don't stop eventually succeed greatly. And the number one reason for underachievement is people stop. Is that there's no limit on what you can accomplish if you're absolutely crystal clear about where you're going, and you're crystal clear about who you are on the inside, and you like yourself, and you don't stop. But here's the most incredible thing. It takes tremendous self-discipline to do these things, because every single force in our psyche pulls us back. And every time you persist, every time you use your discipline to persist, you increase your self-discipline. And every time you increase your self-discipline, you increase your propensity to persist. And every act of self-discipline and persistence raises your self-esteem, because you like and respect yourself more, because you know you're the kind of person who didn't quit when others did. And when you like yourself more, it gives you greater discipline and greater propensity to persist. So all of these qualities, which are acts, behaviors that you do as a conscious result of willpower, you decide, by gum, that's what I want. By gum, this is who I am. By gum, that's where I'm going. And when you refuse to quit, you like yourself more and more, which makes it less and less likely that you'll ever quit. And you finally reach the point where people will say, well, she will never quit. If she says she's going to do it, she's going to do it. You can take that to the bank. He will never quit. He's not the kind of person that quits. Once he says he's going to do something, one thing I know about him is he will never, never stop. When you get that kind of a reputation, not only is your great success materially guaranteed, but your happiness and your respect and esteem in life and with the people around you is guaranteed as well. You become one of the finest people in our society, and you did it because you made yourself. You sculpted yourself. You crafted your own personality. It wasn't done to you or for you or with you. You did it yourself. Which causes you to like yourself more, which makes you persist even more, which raises your self-discipline, which makes you more likable and more personable person, and which makes you more successful in everything you do. Isn't that great? And everything that I'm telling you is perfectly true. It simply requires discipline. Let me tell you a quick story about discipline. Ole and Sven, they shoot a deer, and they're dragging the deer back to the truck by the tail, and they keep losing their balance and tripping, and a farmer comes along and says, boys, what are you doing? He says, well, we're dragging the deer back to the truck. He says, well, boys, God's provided that deer with handles for dragging. You're not supposed to drag a deer by the tail. You're supposed to drag a deer by the antlers. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much, sir. So they went around. They started dragging the deer by the antlers and whipping along. After 5 minutes, whipping along, Ole says to Sven, he says, the farmer was right. It goes a lot easier by the antlers. He says, yeah, Ole, but we're getting further and further from the truck. Not you, but the world is full of people whose primary concern in life is entertainment and tension-relieving activities. It's fun, fun, fun till their daddy takes their T-bird away, but they're getting further and further from the truck of their real goals and their real aspirations, right?
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next CD.